priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 67, featuring the top five sneaky good episodes. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I'm Jim Morehouse, and I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast. And tonight, I think we have a fun one for you. It's time for our top five sneaky good episodes, and we'll talk about exactly what that means in our prime directive here shortly. But basically, I think we're looking at sneaky good episodes as those episodes that, not about being underrated, it's not about guilty pleasures, I think, because we've done those. I think this is more about those episodes that people just don't realize are actually really, really good. They're sneaky good. So who knows what our guests are going to come up with tonight, but we're about to find out. And speaking of our guests, we have two great ones tonight. First up, returning for the umpteenth time to Trek Ranks, is one of our favorites, Jen Tift. Jen, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks so much. This is great.
It
Go
is great.
To this topic.
Great to have you back on. Last time you were on for our top five shapes, episode 56. And our second guest tonight is making his Trek Ranks debut. We've been trying to get him on a while. I love it. And we're excited to get him on the show. He's Ron Warble, who is at Trekker Ron on Twitter. Welcome, Ron. Great to have you on, man.
So excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a really fun topic.
Yeah, I think this topic is going to be a good one with maybe some deep cuts and some picks that we haven't heard too much on Trek Ranks. So, Ron, we'd like to get our Trek origin story from our first-time guest. So what is your Trek backstory and kind of how did you get into Trek?
My very first memory of Star Trek is in 1992. I was in the second grade visiting the Smithsonian, Washington, D.C. with family, and I do not even remember having seen the show, but having a mini meltdown and a temper tantrum as a child because we could not see Captain Kirk's chair. There was some sort of Star Trek exhibit at the Smithsonian we couldn't do, and that just did not sit well with second grade Ron. Trek has always been a part of me. I remember watching The Next Generation growing up. As soon as Netflix came around, getting all the DVDs and watching every episode that I possibly could. So I have been a fan of every Trek and every iteration. The only series I have not seen all the way through is the animated series. And I absolutely love all things Star Trek.
That is amazing. I love that story. I really want to get back to the Smithsonian and see. I just found out they're going to be renovating and closing down the Enterprise exhibit for a while.
I saw that.
For like years, apparently. I was so bummed.
As long as they take good care of that ship.
Yes, someday it'll be back. All right, so let's jump into our Trek Ranks recalibration and get into tonight's topic.
What are you recalibrating?
Everything. It's a sweeping, a recalibration of all systems.
All right, first up, general order number one here at the Trek Ranks Podcast is that we love Trek and we love to rank Trek via some deep dive topics just to get the conversation started. And as our good friend, the Vulcan Master, likes to remind us each week, the main driver for all of our discussion here at the Trek Ranks Podcast is...
Infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
That's right. No wrong answers. It's not about being right or definitive in any way. It's about sharing the things that we love about Star Trek. So we love it all from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise and the Kelvin timeline and now Discovery as well. It's all fair game here on the Trek Ranks Podcast. And remember that we use episodes as a shorthand, but the 13 films are always in play as well.
Open hailing frequencies. Hailing frequencies open. On viewer.
And you can find Trek Ranks on the Net Access Interface links at TrekRanks.com. And you can contact me directly on Twitter at TrekRanks or at Enterprise Extra. And you can also call and leave us a message with your own picks at 609-512-LLAP at 609-512-5527. All right, so to wrap that up, Jen and Ron, why don't you guys let everyone know how they can get a hold of you guys on the Net Access Interface. Jen.
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter. I'm on there often. My name is at Ida Quarks.
Love that handle. And Ron, how about you?
I'm on Twitter at Trekker Ron, and you can also find me on the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas Facebook group.
Okay, let's jump into our prime directive. So we're going to skip our level one diagnostic. Forgot to mention that. So we're going straight into the Prime Directive. Let's do it.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our Prime Directive.
Define Prime Directive.
Okay, so I want to open up this week's Prime Directive with a little decree, I think is the right word I'm going to use. So the goal for us in defining a sneaky good episode is to not get into kind of underrated or the guilty pleasure territory that I mentioned before. We've done those. Those are well covered here on Trek Ranks and in other episodes. So for me, the target of a sneaky good episode is something that people just kind of have missed or didn't realize that, you know what, that episode that I've kind of forgotten about and never really maybe considered a classic Trek episode is actually really, really good. It's sneaky good, which means it's great and no one realizes it. So I wanted to kind of throw that out there first. And I don't normally start with my Prime Directive, but I'll just finish up by saying that I think in making my picks that I stayed away from the kind of like big action or big special effects pieces or even like comedy or like big scope episodes that grab attention. And I was just looking for these little hidden gems that you watched, you maybe thought was okay, and then you kind of forgot about it or dismissed it. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're kind of realize, you know what, that's actually a really good episode. So that's me. And now let's hear from Jen and Ron and kind of see if they're on the same page or how they broke down their Prime Directive. So Jen, let's start with you. How did you come up with your sneaky good episodes?
Okay, so my Prime Directive is slightly different than yours, but in the same vein. For mine, I kind of brought out my cynical side a little bit. And it's, to me, you know, for an episode to be sneaky good, there has to be a reason that you wouldn't expect it to be good, or it does something you didn't see coming and that was good, you know? So an episode that sneaks up on you and maybe subverts your expectations about what it was going to be, kind of thing. So same as you said, Jim, you know, there aren't as many like top tier, you know, epic episodes in my list because they don't have that same sneak factor of them being good. And the example of what I'm talking about is like if you like didn't like the Ferengi for whatever reason, and you're like, oh great, here comes another Ferengi episode, and then you get, you know, the Magnificent Ferengi, and you're like, oh wait, this is actually really good.
That doesn't sneaking apply up
to
on
me.
You.
Yeah, it sneaks up on me. That doesn't apply to me because I happen to think the Ferengi are delightful. But you know, it's that vein of your expectations kind of being low for it, and then like, oh wait a minute, wow, they're really doing something great.
I love the literal sneaking up on you. Yeah. That's great. Okay, Ron, how about you, man? How'd you break it down?
So I took another different approach. I don't believe that there's any such thing as bad Trek. So I looked at it and said, what are traditionally considered bad episodes or not the most fan favorites that you can make a pretty good argument in saying, you know what, these are actually pretty good. You might have to change one or two things about the episode. Maybe if it's an episode that if it took place in a different series might make a little bit more sense. So on that rating, I looked at the list and I only chose episodes that had less than a 5-star rating on IMDb. And they had to be in the bottom 50% of Trek Ranks. And most of these are actually in the bottom 20, 25%. And I only have one exception to my Prime Directive, but we'll get there.
Oh, my goodness. So that is, I love this. So you're going on the offensive. You are going to make the defense.
I'm going to make a lot of friends in this episode. Let me tell you.
You're going to defend some major, major episodes. I love this. Or I should say, major infamous episodes. Oh, this is so cool. This is going to be a great topic. All right, let's do this. Let's get Third Emoticon in here and introduce us to the order of things.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
Thank you, Third Emoticon. As always, just a quick reminder on how we're going to go through the order of things. First, each of us will reveal our 5-word summary and a hashtag to tease our pick. Then we'll lay out our top 5 sneaky episode title, and we'll talk about why we chose that episode. And at the end, we'll ask everyone for a few secondary system picks that maybe just missed their list. And as always, if we have any duplicate picks, make sure you listen for the Defiant Torpedoes. Okay, Jen, let's get this kicked off with you. What's your number five pick for a sneaky good episode?
All right. So my five words in the hashtag. I'm not a real person. Hashtag liar. This is Short Trek, Season 1, Episode 2, Calypso.
Ooh. I love outside the box.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons all the Short Treks were pretty sneaky, in that you were kind of expecting just one-off independent, you know, little stories, and it turned out that they kind of really did fit into the greater scheme of things with Discovery. And Calypso is the one that really took me aback in that way the most, because the character of Zora literally changed the way I watched Discovery. After that, you know, they introduced this character that was, I mean, first of all, delightful. She's wonderful, but she's also, it developed the ship in a way that I never saw coming. And I like the fact that now we know something that the characters in Discovery don't know about their ship, and what the possibilities are. And now, when I was watching season two, then, you know, Arium uploads her memories into the computer before she dies. And does that mean anything? Is that going to be part of Zora's story? You know, because I think of Discovery now as Zora, even though she hasn't evolved into that yet. And I never expected anything like that, and just, you know, a silly little supposedly went off. And I really don't think, based on everything we know about, you know, about Discovery and about the other Short Treks and everything else, that I don't think they're going to drop that thread. So I think we'll get to see her again, or at least some of it again. And, you know, and was a really interesting thing to do in an otherwise, in a story that was otherwise self-contained.
Right. It's such a fascinating 17-minute episode of Star Trek. I love it. I adore it when it came out. I think it's totally original. And I've been trying not to think about it in those terms that you said, because part of me is like, okay, I don't have to hold them to this. That this being, because, you know, timelines can go any direction, and but I really want it to be that, right? Like, I want it to end with Zora and then and the ship and the nebula, and I love it. And the thing I love most about it, and I've, you know, some of my Trek friends don't like it as much, but the Vedrash. I love that that little Michael. I don't even know how to say his name. Michael Chabon.
Michael
Chabon. Yeah, it must
Chabon.
Be Michael.
I think he pronounced it Chabon. My relatives that have that last name pronounce it Chabon.
It must be Chabon. Yes. So, okay. Yeah. So Michael Chabon, we're not cutting that out because I'm not that proud. Michael Chabon, I love that Vedrash thing. For those of you who don't know that, that's the enemy that Kraft is running from. And he acknowledged later that that's like, I can't remember what it's called, but an amalgamation of a new word for Federation that now 800 years later,
what the Federation had became. Yeah.
Is Vedrash. Right. Pretty cool.
That's fascinating too, because now she says it's almost 1,000, it's been almost 1,000 years. So that can put them in the time period where they are now. Are we going to see Kraft's allies? Are we going to see the Vedrash, you know, and
are we going to see Betty Boop? Who knows? All right. Ron, what's your take on Calypso, Ron?
I loved Calypso. It was without a doubt my favorite of the Short Treks. And you know, like you said, they all kind of tied in. I'm so excited to see where this one leads to. I don't think this is the last time we're going to see this time period, obviously. This was such a good episode. It was really sneakily good. Short Treks, every track, they were all great, but I think this one just stood out on its own. This could have been a full-on episode, and it would have been considered among the best of Trek, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was genius, and it is sneaky good. I love it. Okay, Ron, how about you? What's your number five pick?
So my number five pick, the five words are Janeway in Paris equals love, hashtag to infinity and beyond. And we're going right with it. Voyager season 2, episode 15, Threshold.
Sneaky good threshold. Yeah, let's hear it.
That's a way to start off.
Like I said, we're here to make friends. This episode is, without a doubt, it is not the best Trek, but I think it is sneaky good. It's going to, at its core, it's such a strong story. I think that going to Warp 10 is something, obviously, if you're stuck in the Delta Quadrant, you're researching, you're trying to figure out, can they actually figure it out? Who knows? But they do in this episode. When you combine with that Lizard Paris, Lizard Janeway, it's a tale as old as time. I love this story. I think it's fun. I think it's lighthearted. When I look at all the different Trek series, I love Voyager, and I look at Voyager as the more lighter of all the different series. It seems to have more fun as it goes through its stories. And I think this is just, it's a fun story with a very basic sci-fi twist.
You know, we've defended this before, defended all the time, that the first 15, 20 minutes is like a really good episode. Yeah. And the last 20 is dependent on, you know, kind of your taste, I think, of how far off it drops off. You know, my point was always when the tongue comes out, it's like, oh no, oh, they did.
I think my favorite part in the whole episode, Paris is apologizing to Janeway at the end. You know, I'm so sorry. And she says, what makes you think that you were the one that initiated this?
I mean, that was another one where they just went the whole way there, right? And now we're acknowledging it. I mean, yeah, it's amazing. And an Emmy Award winning episode for makeup, which
not only which Emmy Award winning, but it beat out The Visitor, considered one of the greatest episodes for that.
So Emmy. Funny. So funny. What's your take on Threshold, Jen?
Oh, the thing that I like about Threshold is that we're talking about it.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those episodes that's just such an inside, I don't want to say like an inside joke, but just like a, it's just a thing about Trek that exists that will always, that you could always have a conversation with someone about, you know, another Trekkie about. And the, you know, the lizard babies, I wish they would have taken the lizard babies with them. I feel very sad that they left their little lizard babies behind. I would not have left my lizard babies behind.
We're in such a good period of Trek right now with these spinoffs. I think that's the spinoff that we all really want. What happened to the children?
Right. What happened to the poor lizard babies? But I think it's an excellent choice for this because, like you said, Jim, the plot about the Warp 10 is really interesting and really kind of does tie in with a lot of the later Tom Paris character and. And you're right, he loses his tongue and it becomes a different episode, but it's a unique episode and one that only Trek could have done.
That is for sure. Written by the great Brandon Braga. All right, so here's my number five. It's going to be a little bit more of a middle of the road pick, which basically all my picks are. My five words and a hashtag, Neelix Ghost Story, intelligently gripping, hashtag, it's all about the structure, and it is The Haunting of Deck 12 from Voyager Season 6. I love this episode, and it's one of those ones that you just kind of forget about. And the structure of this story, one of the things I love about it, and when I think about it now, is it's basically an episode of Lower Decks, which is the upcoming new animated series that Mike McMahon is working on, because the whole thing here is that Lower Decks is going to be about the B story taking place behind some big A story. And the A story here is about, well, I flipped that, but the A story here is Neelix trying to keep these bored kids occupied and telling this story, while the B story is like the crew dealing with this kind of alien creature in a nebula threatening the ship, which of course is a story we've seen a bunch of times on Star Trek. So super clever way to twist that narrative and tell this story. I love every scene with Neelix here. There's a couple of awesome meta moments in this episode where each Eb is challenging his storytelling by kind of getting into the nitty gritty details. And it's a total meta rip on nitpickers in Star Trek. Cause Neelix is like, yeah, the details don't matter. It's the point is that this is what's happening. And I love that. It's got Tau Celeste. It's just a great episode that people forget about. And it's sneaky good. Jen, what's your take on The Haunting of Deck 12?
Yeah, it's a good episode. I enjoy that one too. I enjoy, I enjoy Godfather Neelix. You know, this is just another example of him just being really doing really well with children. I like the use of the bored kids here as
right
as an interesting audience for a campfire story, because they're so knowledgeable and they've seen so much horror in their, you know, in the life, that the fact that he can grip them with this tale it makes for a really interesting way to deliver the story. So it's a good pick.
I like that contrast with what they've seen. Ron, how about you on Haunting of Deck 12?
This is such a good episode. If you have to be stuck in a situation like this where you need someone to distract you, there's nobody better suited for that than Neelix. Yes. And yeah, I'm just reading on Memory Alpha right now. There's towards the end again, Paris asks him if he told the kids a Mother Goose story, and Neelix says, "Certainly not. Some of those fairy tales can be frightening."
You know, that's right. Yeah. Kids. That's right. I love that. And I love the way Mazzotti and Ichab just kind of keep snipping at each other, because Ichab keeps interrupting. It's just a really good episode that people forget about, and that's my prime directive. All right, so let's go to round four. And Jen, what's your number four pick?
Okay, my five words and a hashtag: turn on your Borg light, hashtag, and let it shine on me. This is Voyager Season 3, Episode 17, Unity.
Oh my goodness. I considered this. I love this episode. Totally sneaky good.
It's so sneaky. It's sneaky because, okay, so this is actually the first Voyager episode that the Borg show up in.
Mm-hmm.
And this was also first aired a few months after First Contact came out. So the expectations for this episode are sky high, you know, and you think you're going to get finally, you know, Voyager is meeting the Borg. There's going to be this huge epic action battle, you know, kind of episode. And instead we get a really down to earth, more character study of what it's like to be, you know, to be taken by the Borg, to be assimilated and to be removed from the collective. And they do such a good job here. Instead of following First Contact, you know, and having epic action, they kind of spring more from Next Generation's Descent, you know, and that idea of, you know, of the Borg, the ex-Borg, the cooperative here. And the cooperative is so interesting. It's really interesting that they go into that, the connection they have could be a good thing, you know, that they could use it to solve problems and faster, and to even heal wounds and things. But then it also, you know, then you see the downside right away, because the first chance they get, they use their power to inflict the collective will on an individual, and how Riley Frazier is a fascinating character in this. She's kind of a Borg queen too, you know, especially.
Oh, I like that. The Borg queen. Yeah.
And her interactions with Chakotay are fascinating. I enjoy their romance a lot. I know some people aren't as big a fan of Chakotay in that way, but I think their scenes are really dynamic together, especially post Link. They know each other. He knows her in a way he's never known anyone else. And that scene right after post-Link, when they heal his wounds and he's recovering, and they realize that they can still feel what each other's feeling and hear each other's thoughts, and they take full advantage of that. And it's really well done. And another just sneaky point for this that I want to sneak in. This isn't going to win me any friends, Ron, if you're talking about winning friends here, but I enjoy Chakotay 7 a lot. Their relationship. And I think this episode here is kind of the reason why that relationship works for me, because of his experience with the cooperative here. It's he can understand Seven in a unique way, you know, in a way that no one else on the ship really can. I mean, he obviously didn't go through what she went through with the Borg, but he knows what it's like to be in a mini collective, hear others' thoughts, to be used, you know, against your will, with mind control like that. And I think that's one of the reasons that they can kind of connect in that way.
Wow, that's a great,
I agree. I love it.
That's a great shot. Well, everyone knows that we're Team C7 here at at Trek Ranks. No issues there.
We're in the minority.
So I considered this episode, but I didn't pick it because spoiler alert for future Trek Ranks in advance of the Picard series, we are going to be doing our top five Borg episodes. And I thought, there's a chance this could make my top five. There's a chance. So I kept it off this list. It's that good. It is sneaky good. I love this episode. I love the tone. I just love the way they told this story. Ron, how about you? What's your take on Unity?
Again, love this episode. I think it's a sneaky way to introduce the Borg into Voyager as well.
Yep. Yes. You know,
it would have been really easy for them to instantly go all Borg all the time. But in season three, I mean, that's so early on in the series still. They did a good job of peppering it in before it became, we're in Borg territory. And then as far as Chakotay and Seven, what's not to love about that relationship? throughout the whole series instead of focusing on the last episode. But no, such a good episode. And again, such a sneaky way to get the Borg in there. I love it.
Yeah, I love it. And just if we're scoring at home, Blood Fever had that dead Borg at the end right before, which is a great teaser.
It was a corpse. Yes.
the Borg skeleton. Love it. Okay. Ron, I cannot wait to hear your number four pick based on the bottom of Trek Ranks. What do you got?
Well, reaching towards the bottom of the barrel, my five words are, do not light that candle. Take a cold shower, doctor. And we're looking at Sub Rosa, season 7, episode 14 of The Next Generation.
Let's just drop that soundbite in right here.
Oh, I think your imagination is...
Think what you want. See what you want. Just do as I say. Dinner light that candle, and dinner go to that house. Or before you know it, I'll be burying another Howard in this cemetery.
Dinner light that candle. Okay, Ron, what do you got? Why is Sub Rosa sneaky good?
So I rewatched this episode getting ready for this, and I love this episode. It's corny. It has its moments, but honestly, I love me some Dr. Crusher. She does not get enough screen time. And I think Gates McFadden's performance in this episode is absolutely astounding. She does a lot of scenes where she is opposite absolutely no one, just special effects. And the story itself, as a standalone science fiction story, I think it stands true. You've got an alien that is... you know, taking over Dr. Crusher, making her think things that should not happen, acting completely out of character. And for me, it works. I think this is such a good episode. I love everything about it. I love the Scottish town. I love everything that everyone would say is bad about this episode.
I love the fog and engineering. Know what? I love the point you just make. It's great because Gates McFadden is such an amazing actor to begin with. And you make a great point. She's acting just with herself and against special effects the whole time, but it doesn't feel that. It feels like there's somebody with her the whole time. I like that point. And you know what's not sneaky good? Beverly Crusher's hair in this episode, because it is awesome. It is like awesome level 10 out of 10. Jen, what's your take on Sub Rosa?
Yes, I love Sub Rosa too, and this could have been a Harlequin romance novel. You said it stands as a sci-fi story. You could see this as like you said, as a standalone novel, as a standalone story. Besides, you know, the same things I said about Threshold. Like, I love it because we talk about it, you could say, "Do not light that candle," to any other Trekkie, and they know, and you can laugh, have a laugh. But honestly, too, when I saw this, it was always good for me as a young woman to see episodes like this where she has, you know, where a female character has her own sexual agency in the story. Mm-hmm. And that was basically what this whole episode was about, which is something you don't always see all the time, you know, and it's played in a really unique way. but it's good. That's a great pick. That's awesome. I was hoping that would be on your list once I heard your prime directive. I was hoping.
To a lesser extent, I love how we get to see Captain Picard, his relationship with Dr. Crusher as well, when he beams down to the planet and decides he wants to meet Ronan. You know, I'm not sure that this is something he'd necessarily do with anyone of the crew, but knowing his relationship with her, I think he stands out as well in this, and that he's absolutely going to do whatever it takes to make sure that she's making the right choice and is being safe and is not jumping before she leaves. She looks.
Well, that is awesome. I need to point out that Ron's first two picks are both Brandon Braga scripts. So fantastic. Threshold and Sub Rosa. Okay, here's my number four pick, five words in a hashtag. Big fan of the Mannheim effect. Hashtag enough of this self-indulgence. We'll always have Paris from TNG season one. And I this is an amazing Picard episode. He's basically in every scene. It's this episode where, of course, he's kind of reflecting on a past love, and the Mannheim effect has affected time and space in a sector of the galaxy, and it's the Enterprise is investigating, and he meets his past love, played by Michelle Phillips, Janice Mannheim. So for those of you who don't remember it, but it's one of those season one episodes that people just dismiss, but I love it because it's the first time we're really getting to see Picard kind of reflecting about his past life a little bit and his choices. I love the scene where he goes to the holodeck and he's just sitting there talking to the waiter and really, really getting into it, kind of thinking about where his life is. And then he just snaps out of it. He's like, I'm done with this. I need to get back to being myself and trying to figure out this Mannheim effect, which is an awesome special effect. It's just flat out sneaky good, and everyone dismisses this one, I think, because it has that kind of awkward TNG season one feeling. But I love this episode. I think it's super, super. I think it's just good, sneaky good. Oh, and I had to point this out because when I was doing some research on this, in that scene in the holodeck when he's talking to the young woman that's kind of in the same situation that he's reflecting on, her name is Gabrielle, and she's played by an actress named Isabel Lorca. So that's right. She's Gabrielle Lorca. Holy crap. Okay. It's written by two women. I love this episode. I think it gets dismissed too easily. It's sneaky good. Jen, what's your take on We'll Always Have Paris?
I really like that episode too. For all the reasons you said, we're good. But with him at the end in the Paris program, which is just heartbreaking. But it's funny, whenever I watch this episode, I forget that there's a science fiction element to it.
Right.
And I'm always surprised when I see, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the one, right. You know, with the Mannheim effect. And now this episode's 20 times better even, you know, I love episodes that could do that. That could have the human interest, you know, story, but then also the harder science fiction elements and doing that in season one.
And it interweaves those two stories really, really well. Yeah. It's really, really clever. Ron, how about you on We'll Always Have Paris?
I mean, it's a great episode. Like you say, I almost think that season one of Next Generation itself is sneaky good. But that scene in the holodeck, you both mentioned it, but I mean, when he, you know, enough for the self-indulgence, someone who has the weight of over 1,000 souls on their shoulders, you know,
he's very
seriously, and it's time to get back to work.
And I tell you, when I was rewatching it, it hit me because it's like, man, that's part of the story we're going to be seeing continued here in the Picard series. It's coming up. Gave me chills to think, because he's obviously going to be reflecting on choices and the things he's done in this series. Pretty amazing. And there's this great scene too where Crusher's kind of figuring out that he's had a relationship with Janice Mannheim, and Picard says something like, "Oh, we're old friends." She's like, "I gathered." So it's really great. Okay, let's move in to the soup round. Jen, what's your number three pick for a sneaky good episode?
So we're going to stay with Picard's love life here. So my soup round pick, five words and a hashtag. Independent, forceful, brilliant, and adventurous. Hashtag, I like myself when I'm with you. This is TNG season 5, episode 21, The Perfect Mate.
Ooh, that's a great pick. Great pick.
Yeah, this is very sneaky good. I should hate this episode.
I understand that. And I look forward to hearing why you don't.
This is literally an episode where the Enterprise is involved in human trafficking. You know, it should be terrible. She's the character Kamala's being treated so literally like an object that she's being stored in the cargo bay. Like, that's how much of an object that character is here, you know. But I've got to say, I have a real soft spot for this episode. I really like this episode, and it's the execution of the character of Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
The way she speaks about what it means to be a metamorph, you know, to have that empathy, about how, you know, she doesn't feel, she feels incomplete when she's alone. She feels like she finds, you know, she finds fulfillment in pleasing the partner that she's with. And these are all things that, there's no science fiction in this. These are all things that women are conditioned to do. And that's the reason why some of these scenes are so uncomfortable to watch, you know, watching her change her personality from scene to scene, depending on who she's with. Or especially, you know, that scene in 10 Forward where, you know, when everyone's acting really horrible to her. And the reason those scenes are so uncomfortable to watch is because they're real. They're so real. They're such a part of, you know, of a woman's existence, even if you aren't, you know, a perfect, you know, metamorph, right. Beautiful Famke Janssen, you know, whatever, everything. Perfect. These are all things that are real experiences, and the way they execute her character makes her very sympathetic and makes me really see her.
When am I to be presented?
It'll be the first order of business tomorrow at 10.
Would you like some tea?
Thank you, but I should prepare for the ceremony.
Let me help you with pronunciations.
Oh, I think I can muddle my way through.
Please don't leave. Talk to me. I love the sound of your voice. I'll turn out the lights and just listen. I don't want to be alone.
Lights stay on.
And that at the end, when she exerts her independence finally in the only way that she can in the situation she's in, you know, she chooses to imprint on Picard, you know, she's basically condemning herself to a life living right. a lie right. with another partner. And, you know, and but she's, you know, like she is for Arica Vault, but Picard is for her. And yeah. the fact that she at least got to make a choice, the only choice she's gotten to make her entire life. And these societies are awful. And this whole thing is disgusting that she's basically being, you know, a piece of the trade negotiation, and it's awful. But her character and her and Picard interacting really just make this episode stand out to me. And I love it. I love this episode.
It's a great breakdown of why it's sneaky good against
yeah.
the framing of it. It shouldn't be. It should be
right.
appalling. You should look back on it and think, oh my God, it's literally human trafficking. She's an object. I mean, all those things are true, but yet the way it's performed, the way it's written, the way it's really about those two actors, Patrick Stewart.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Benson, and the way that they put this together at the end it's sneaky good. It's really, really sneaky good. Ron, what's your take on The Perfect Mate?
I hadn't seen this episode in a very long time. And actually, I think I watched it last night. And I remember thinking, this is a fantastic episode. The scene where Kamala and Captain Picard are in his writing room, and she's saying, I'll stay in my quarters as long as you come visit. And he's looking for an excuse to say no. The scene where she is being escorted to her quarters by Commander Riker, and he's so obviously being the Captain Kirk of Next Generation, wants to pursue her and doesn't. But the ultimate scene for me in this episode was when Picard walks her down the aisle, and you can just see the look on his face, how he's doing his duty. I mean, to the end, Captain Picard is one of the most noble people that we've ever seen in any TV series. And he's not going to do anything to jeopardize the oath that he's taken as being a Starfleet captain. And he's literally sacrificing love here in the line of duty.
Yeah.
And she's sacrificing the line of duty too. They're both, you know, again, two sides of the same coin there. Yeah. So it's a heartbreaking scene.
I'm really quite dull. So.
Go to bed with a book in my hand.
I love it. Okay, Ron, what's your soup round pick?
All right. So my five words in the hashtag are consider it to be TNG. Hashtag here's to the next generation. And this is Enterprise season 4, episode 22. These are the voyages.
All right.
Again, this episode, I think if taken out of context, if we look at this episode, not as the finale of Enterprise, but rather as a potential episode of Next Generation, it's great. You know, if you really look at this from that shift and say, this is a Riker Troy episode, and let's introduce these characters from Enterprise in the context of being a holodeck, it's a great episode as a standalone. I think Agreed. What ruins this is that it's the finale of Enterprise. Yep. This story, it's strong. It relates. I absolutely love this episode.
It is classic sneaky good, because when you take the context away of being the finale of Enterprise, it's really sneaky good. I love it. I love this pick. I love that it's in this episode. Jen, what's your take on These Are the Voyages?
I really like this episode a lot. I agree. And I agree exactly with what you said that, Ron, that, you know, if this wasn't a finale, this would be a pretty awesome episode. Even if you keep in the part where Trip died unnecessarily,
right,
which really breaks my heart because I adore Trip. But this episode takes place in quote unquote the future from where Enterprise is at the end of season 4. So that would have been a good plot device for us to know that Trip was going to die. And I forget however long the time span is between.
Yeah, it's like 10 years. But
10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, for us to like know that was in his future, that could have been interesting, you know, in another season to them to like foreshadow what we already knew, that he was going to die. But I hate that part.
It's easy retcon.
Exactly. He's alive. Yeah. And read, what's the book that retcons it? The Good That Men Do.
Yes, right.
Yes, read that. Anyone who's really sad about Trip, read The Good That Men Do, and it'll make you feel better. It's good for your soul. But the thing that I like the most about These Are the Voyages are the framing of the scenes where they're talking to Riker as if he's the chef.
Right.
Yep. I think we get some really good character moments there, and Jonathan Frank. So with his gleaming eyes and he's like the stand-in for us, you know, getting to interact with these characters and learn more about them, and it's really well done the way they do that.
Trip
gnawing on a carrot, an unpeeled carrot. I just that's such a Trip thing to do. I love him so much.
And this is one of those episodes, if I could put myself in the future, if I had access to a holodeck, there's no question we would all be running this program and going to Enterprise.
That's a good point. Absolutely. It's
such a great point. So true. And I know that even with the fact that people don't like it because it's the finale, those scenes work as part of a finale. Each character getting kind of their own moment with Jonathan Frakes in that setting, I think it's great.
That's a good point.
All right, so let's close out round three with my pick. Five words and a hashtag. Goes in an unexpected direction. Hashtag strong performances. This is a Voyager episode from season 7, Repentance. And this episode gets me every time. This is the one where Voyager ends up with a bunch of inmates on death row that they're transporting on the ship. And at the beginning, this episode feels like it's very rote. It's filled with kind of these standard Trek tropes, you know, these prisoners being transferred and there's an accident and they're all kind of smarmy and they all feel like they're a little bit one note characters. But then it takes this twist where the lead prisoner, who's the character's Iko, and he's played by Jeff Kober, who's an amazing character actor who's in a ton of stuff, and he's usually playing the heavy, whether it's Buffy the Vampire is one where I remember him distinctly, but he plays the heavy in a lot of stuff. And you think this is another one of those episodes just playing the type, but everything changes when he has this accident and all of a sudden he starts feeling remorse for his crimes. And again, you think he's just kind of playing Seven and trying to get an angle to get free. And I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop where it's just like, okay, yeah, he's still a bad guy. But no, he's just a guy who's now super remorseful for his crimes. And you got these amazing scenes with him and Seven where she's kind of learning about the way humanoids are conditioned and the way they act and the friendship between Iko and Seven at the end where she's defending him and they're trying to fight for his life, and that, you know, the ultimate outcome from the family is no, you still need to die for the crime. It's really, really sad. And I just think this is a classic sneaky good episode, because if you just sit down and watch it, it's a real clever story and then real clever the directions that it goes. So Repentance, Ron, what's your take on this one? Do you have much memory of it?
It's funny. I just finished listening to your episode with the top five villains who weren't really villains. This heap would totally fit that as well. I think this is a great story. And
good point.
Anytime we can see the human side of Seven, particularly in these episodes where she's still very Borg in the beginning, but we see growth in her character throughout the episode. I think it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I something about this episode just moves me, and I needed to have it on my list. Jen, what's your take on this one?
That it really is sneaky good. It's depressing to watch.
Right, it is.
It really hits on some really hard issues. I mean, it talks about the treatment of prisoners at the beginning, you know, with Neelix and everything, and obviously the death penalty, and the family wanting, you know, vengeance instead of justice. You know, is watching it is challenging, and what it does for Seven's character too. You know. I haven't seen it in a while, but at the end she talks about how, you know, he killed one guy. I killed, how many people did I kill when I was a Borg, you know, and her having some guilt about that, which I don't think that she should have, that she wasn't acting on her own accord.
Right.
And then how, you know, obviously why she sees herself in this character so much, but it's just such a,
It doesn't rank high on Trek ranks because of my number one scale is always rewatchability. And this is not one that you want to rewatch a lot because it's not a lot of fun, but it's sneaky good.
It's sneaky good. It really is.
All right. Let's go to round two. Jen, what's your number two sneaky good episode?
Okay. Hold on. I need to refresh myself after that one. Just, I haven't seen that Repentance in a long time. And that hits me. I think I'm going to watch it tonight.
Jeff Cover is such a good actor. It's so well done.
Okay. My number two pick, five words in a hashtag, his final act, a gift, hashtag the wind beneath his Tarkalian hawk wings. This is Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode 12, The Begotten.
Yes. Sneaky good.
Sneaky good. Okay. So the reason this one is sneaky good to me is because, I mean, episodes where women give birth are usually horrible. Like, they're notoriously just ridiculous and crummy, you know? So you're not expecting much to begin with, you know, here, because like, oh, let's get this over with, you know, the birth of with, then we can move on. But they also, there's also the trope in a lot of episodes where women give birth of, like, the father is trying to get to the birth and he can't make it. He's like, gets trapped in an elevator. He's in traffic or whatever. And then his subplot is, you know, coming to terms with his feelings about becoming a father, you know, and working through his issues with that stuff. And they did something really clever by giving that subplot to Odo, you know, even though he's not connected in any way to the O'Brien baby birth, him dealing with those issues was a really interesting choice to make, I thought. And oh man, and they do such a good job with it. Like, I mean, Odo literally spends half the episode acting opposite, you know, like a glob of corn syrup. and it's poignant and it's believable and it doesn't ever feel like he is, you know. You feel his emotions, his genuine feelings for this baby changeling, you know, and his interactions with his, you know, surrogate dad, you know, Dr. Mora, really felt real, you know, to work, and Odo getting to work through his, you know, horrible child, quote unquote, you know, childhood. I don't know how you want to frame it, but getting a chance to work through that in such an interesting way, and then the ending that just gets me every time. with when you see that the baby, you know, the baby changeling is not going to make it, right. And he absorbs himself into Odo, and Odo turns himself into the Tarkalian hawk, you know, that like he said he would teach the baby changeling how to change into someday, and he get and that ends, and that ties into the bigger arc of Odo's arc of you know having that shape-shifting ability being taken away from him, and it's such a nice way to end that.
The final moment in this episode is the perfect ending to that arc for Odo, the Tarkalian
Hawk.
Such
a good way.
Yeah, it really
for him to get his powers back.
This is a perfect sneaky episode. Awesome.
Oh my god, it's so good. And but that's not the end of the episode. The end of the episode is really good too. The final scene is Odo and Kira together. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they have this wonderful conversation about the experiences that they both had, about how she's, you know, going through, they both basically lost children.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this episode in different unique ways, and the emotions she's going through after having, you know, been a surrogate, and how hard it is, how she wants to hold that baby, and how Odo feels after losing the baby changeling. And it brings those two characters together. You know, and they could be there for each other in such a way that they can understand each other like that, that is unique to those two at that moment. And it's one of my favorite Odo Kira moments in the relationship. So good.
Star Trek is awesome.
Yes.
It really is.
It's amazing. Ron, what's your take? Yes. What's your take on The Begotten?
This is one of those. It is a sneaky good episode, because when I think of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, this is not an episode that even pops into the top of my mind.
Right.
But it is such a good episode. Any opportunity to see Dr. Moore and Odo interact, I think that's such an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
There's such a love there from Dr. Moore, and Odo is just not sure how to even respond to that. And they get a little bit of closure on that story. And obviously, we all knew that at some point, Odo would have to become a changeling again.
Right.
Right. Like you
said, what better way to finalize that than to end this arc with that? I think it was such a good episode.
Great way to do it. Love Dr. Moore, the played by the great James Sloyan, one of the best recurring actors in the Trek family. All right, Ron, what's your number two pick?
All right, I think we're all probably saw this one coming. My five words and a hashtag on this one is share your pain with me. Hashtag, what does God need of a starship?
Yeah.
Five, final frontier.
I'm excited that you picked this, because I thought maybe it was going to be Code of Honor, but no.
I thought you were going to say Spock's brain.
No, with this one, just a couple of things need to be changed, and it becomes some of the best Star Trek ever. If Cybok had never been introduced as being a relative of Spock, if we didn't pass the galactic barrier, I think this episode is so much, or this movie is so much fun. Right. It's got a decent story, the Nimbus 3 context, the setting. This is honestly one of my favorite Star Trek movies. Again, trying to make friends here. But it has a 5.5 rating, and on Trek Ranks falls in at the absolute bottom. I think it is so much fun.
Oh, man. Well, you know, this is, I love that you have this picked as sneaky good. It is, you know, it's well documented. There's no wrong answers, and I'm not debating in any way. This is my least two favorite hours of Trek in the 700 hour library of Trek episodes. But I like that. I mean, there are sneaky good elements in it. I mean, the Kirk, Spock, McCoy stuff in this film is great stuff. There's no one's going to argue that their interactions are great. My issues are that they dumb down everybody else in a really insulting way, whether it's Scotty or Uhura. And you already said about Cybok, but sneaky good.
It's the first time we see the Enterprise A in great detail.
Yes, the ship is amazing.
So many elements of this that are fun. It has its challenges, but
the way it's shot as well, the lighting of it is great. So but listen, the thing that's really sneaky good about this is Kirk, Spock, McCoy, trifecta. Absolutely. We haven't seen that in films, and that stuff's really powerful. So, Jen, what's your Star Trek V, The Final Frontier take?
Oh, I have to admit, it's not exactly my favorite either, but it does have some fun moments, like you said. I mean, I love the stuff. This is the scene of them around the campfire. is really good in the mountain climbing stuff. There's some fun things in it.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the Yosemite stuff. Well, that's also
marshmallows.
yeah, they're in Yosemite. Yeah.
That's also the Kirk.
Oh yeah, that is Kirk Spock and McCoy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Kirk Spock McCoy stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Let's go to my number two pick. My five words in a hashtag. Prescient message. It gets better. Hashtag John Doe reflects today's world, and it is the TNG season 3 episode Transfigurations. It's an amazing episode about people emerging and trying to discover themselves, while being oppressed by some backward thinking and scared government officials. I mean, holy cats, people. Is there anything more appropriate to Star Trek than that? I don't think so, especially in today's world. I love this episode. I think it's sneaky good. It comes right before Best of Both Worlds, so it's really easy to kind of forget about this one. And everything about this episode with John Doe, he knows that he's come out there to escape because he's being persecuted and he's not allowed to be his true self. It's this amazing Trek message. And when the big bad shows up, he's literally these are the things he spouts off. He's a disruptive influence. He spreads lies. He encourages dissent. He disturbs the natural order of our society. I mean, they literally label him as evil, which, where have we heard all of those things before from in today's world? It's just a really, really amazing episode for me that I think speaks to, I think it really speaks to to our culture today, and was really foreshadowing in terms of kind of how some people want to view other people in our society. So I love this episode. I think it's really, really sneaky good. And Jen, what's your take on Transfigurations?
Man, this one, it never really stuck out to me. I'm going to have to rewatch it in that, thinking about that and and see if it sticks more with me. The only things that stick with me from this episode are that the light being, I really think he fixes O'Brien's arm. In this episode.
Yeah, I think this might be the first kayak reference.
Kayaking injury of Brian's arm. So those things stick with me, but I don't know if it just, I don't know why it just might.
I this one's sneaky good. I say go back and watch it.
Sneaky good. I am. I'm going to go back.
Ron, what's your take on Transfigurations?
It's great. The thing from this episode that stands out to me is Worf giving Jory LaForge dating advice.
Oh, right.
This is a really fun episode, and it is true to the core of what Star Trek is. And Captain Kirk says a line in there at some point about, we seek out new life, and this is a great example of that. I think this is a great episode.
Yeah, it's just amazing the way these villains are trying to stop this person from becoming their true self, and it's just, just speaks to.
And their true self is beautiful.
Yeah.
Too. Like, why were they resisting this? And that's also, an apt analogy too. Like, why are you?
And it's funny because it's also got a little bit, this always happens in Trek where it's hard to really tell a completely 100% original Trek story, but the Saru evolution was actually really similar to this. When I was rewatching, I was like, no one let these people evolve to this level. Mm-hmm. They would literally just kill them. They wouldn't let them get to this point, which is exactly what they did with the Kelpians, except they were killing them themselves or cooling themselves. So, all right, let's go to round one. This is sneaky good episodes round one. So you know what that means. All of this, since these are the top picks, these are all sneaky great episodes. So let's do this, Jen. What's your number one pick?
This is a sneaky great episode to me. This is a personal favorite, sneaky great. Okay. Five words in hashtag. Star Trek's Hallmark Christmas movie, hashtag to family. This is Voyager season 5, episode 22, 11:59.
Perfect sneaky good episode.
It's sneaky good. But it really is. It's fun. This is beat for beat a cheesy Christmas romance. Mm-hmm. In one way. I mean, literally. Okay, here are all the tropes. You know, a city woman comes to a small town around the holidays, falls in love with the local small town man, you know, who runs a bookstore. It could have been a bakery or an inn. You know, it's one of those things. He's a widower with a precocious child that adores, you know, the city girl. And there's a businessman who almost gets her to leave the town, and arbitrary deadline that falls on a holiday. I mean, she literally drives away and then has a change of heart and turns around and goes back. So like, it's beat for beat a cheesy Christmas romance. But then at the end, though, you know, it has the Star Trek twist of, you know, a lot of those movies kind of like fetishize almost the backward small town life, you know, like she decides to live in the small town life with him. But in the Star Trek twist, you know, she brings him into the future instead of reverse. And she kind of gets him to look more towards the future. But the reason this made my sneaky good list is the sneaky part of it is that there's literally no science fiction at all in the entire episode.
That's true.
And they still managed to tell a Star Trek story, a really Star Trek story about embracing the future and about exploring.
That fits your Prime Directive so well, because it does sneak that in there.
It sneaks it in there, and it's funny too, because it takes place in the future. This came out in May of 1999, you know, which was before Y2K, and the episode takes place from the year 2000 to 2001. So it's like a year and a half in the future. So it's after all the, as I watched this episode, I was getting ready to start my summer of debugging code for Y2K, which is what we all did that summer. You know, all the other engineers and me, you know, that's what we did for our summer jobs, was debug code for Y2K. And there's still some question about that, about, you know, how bad it was going to be, and all that discussion, and this kind of took all of that conversation out of play. It was like, oh yeah, that's done. It was a no, never mind. And now we can just look to the future. We can build a model for the first colony on Mars. Like, this is an interesting time in history. Like, get excited is the message, you know, get excited about that, about the future. And
I like that too, because they were, remember at the time, there was also that kind of debate, for those of you who are old enough to remember, there was also the debate, when's the actual millennium,
right?
2000 or is it 2001? And here's Star Trek putting a stake in the ground, it's 2001.
Yeah, that is a very real conversation from that time period. Oh, I'll celebrate in 2001.
Exactly.
The real millennium. So I just adore everything about this.
It's a fantastic pick. Ron, what's your take on 1159?
This is, like you said, it's the hallmark episode of Voyager. It is such a feel-good episode. I love that it really encapsulates how everybody felt around the Y2K area too. You know, there was such a sense of optimism about the future, and that's captured so well in this episode. Even in the beginning of the episode, I love how it begins with Neelix approaching Janeway and asking her about Earth. He seems to have such a curiosity about this place that he's only heard about through his crew members. I mean, this is quite possibly one of the most optimistic episodes of Star Trek that's out there, and that in its own makes it phenomenal.
Oh, I like that perspective. That's good. Yeah. I mean, and it is just it's just a must rewatch during the holidays.
It is.
I love it. Such a great pick for this. Okay, Ron, let's get your number one sneaky good, which means sneaky great episode.
So I kind of broke my own Prime Directive with this one. For my number one pick, my five words were, you people need a union, # strike a blow against exploitation. And I chose Bar Association.
Yes.
Fantastic. I love it.
For episode 16. And with this, I wanted to focus more on the Ferengi in general. Yeah. I love the Ferengi. I think they started as such a, not a poorly written villain, but it wasn't a purely thought out villain in Next Generation, and became a species that has such a great story behind them. The Ferengi are my favorite alien throughout all of Star Trek. I think they, towards the end of Deep Space Nine, they're so well-rounded. They're not two-dimensional as they were meant to be. And this episode shows that. It shows they're capable of growth. It shows an optimism in a capitalistic society.
Well, I love that the Ferengi are sneaky good. End of story. That's a great way to frame it. They really are. And this pick, this is a sneaky good episode. It really is. People kind of dismiss this one as throwaway Ferengi episode, but it's really, really strong with Brunt. And I mean, Quark is such a great character. Jen, what's your take on Bar Association?
Oh, this happens to be one of my favorite.
We have two Ferengi lovers on this. I love it.
But I love everything about this episode. The one thing I wanted to highlight, I would want to highlight, because I could talk for a long time about this. I adore this episode. It's a great pick. But in the beginning, I mean, there's obviously messages that are very, very relevant to today. But the very beginning, the scene that's played for laughs, where Rom's sick. And he has to come to work anyway.
Right.
And it's funny. It's played for laughs. So, you know, he pours the ear medicine, medicine to his ear, which is just such a wonderful sight gag for the Ferengi. And he does it so well. But that really, really hits close to home, that this is a real issue for a lot of people who just can't afford to take sick days like that and having to work through that. And it's uncomfortable to think about, and this makes us think about it. And I adore this episode. Great pick.
It's a great pick. It really is a great message. For sure, one of my favorite Ferengi episodes. I love it. Great pick. Okay, let's go to my round one pick. Five words and a hashtag. Timeless, underrated dissection of love. Hashtag Kim's second best episode. It is Voyager Season 5, The Disease. And when I came up with this idea for this topic more than a year ago, it's been on the long list for a while, sneaky good. This is the episode that I wanted to highlight when I literally wrote it in my notes. Sneaky good episodes, The Disease, because I do not understand why people don't like this episode. Not only should it not be derided, it's sneaky great. It's got all these really strong performances. Janeway or Kate Mulgrew, Garrett Wong, his girlfriend in this, Darren Tall, played by Musetta Vander. It's a really, really strong, clever sci-fi conceit. Their relationship feels real. I really connect with them. It's got these great scenes with Harry and Seven when she's diagnosing kind of his condition of love as a disease. And there's that great moment where she literally is like, "You're glowing." And he's like, "What?" She's like, "You're epidermis, luminesced." Like, literally, "You're glowing."
Borg have referenced this condition in over 6,000 assimilated species.
Condition? You make it sound like a disease.
Physiologically, it bears a striking similarity to disease. A series of biochemical responses that trigger an emotional cascade, impairing normal functioning.
Forget it.
Are you in love, Ensign?
I guess that's what I've been asking myself.
You're glowing.
Beg your pardon?
Your epidermis luminesced.
Huh. Must be the lighting in here.
No, it was you. You should report to sick bay.
It's nothing.
You must comply.
I love this episode. I just think it's got Paris and Kim. Paris covering for Kim. I don't understand why people don't love this. It's a really strong episode. Oh, and it has the best tracking shot in the history of Star Trek. There, I will argue this. I will die on this hill. This great moment where Kim is arguing with Janeway, and they start in the observation lounge. They move to the bridge. They exchange more words. She's like, "In my ready room." They go in there, and Garrett Wong gives the best performance that he's ever given in Star Trek, dissecting exactly why he's in love with this character and how she's being unreasonable. And it takes about 2.5 minutes, and it's brilliant. And yeah, the B plot's good with the generational ship. I love this episode. Ron, what's your take on The Disease?
I love this episode. You know, Harry Kim at this point has been an ensign for almost 6 years.
True.
He is the model Starfleet officer. He dies in a couple episodes. I mean, he goes through so much. And this is really the first time that we see him really actively break rules like this. And I think it gives his character a lot of depth. It makes him not so the perfect ensign who never does anything wrong. And it shows his relationship with Captain Janeway. It shows a bit of a fraction there. You know, she for the first time ever has him questioning him or questioning her right on the bridge of the Voyager.
Yep.
Something an ensign doesn't do with a captain. And I think it's so well played by these two characters. I love this episode.
Yeah, the performances are so strong, and the sci-fi conceit in this is so strong. Just, I don't get it. Jen, what's your take?
I really love this episode too, and I think you know Kim in general doesn't get the credit that he deserves. He's a really adventurous character who takes risks, and there are a lot. There's examples that, I mean, he jumps out of the the one where he's in San Francisco. And he,
oh yeah, a non sequitur.
Non sequitur. He jumps out of the moving spaceship based on his theory. You know, he takes that risk.
Right.
The other episode where he, I don't remember the title either. I'm sure you do, Jim. The one where he's trapped on the planet and they have to, like, he has to. They put their dead people in the pods and shoot them up. And
oh yeah, Emanations. Yeah,
Emanations. Thank you. I knew you would know. But he's like, I'll just die, and the doctor will bring me back. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
a great point.
There's a lot of those things that he never gets enough credit for. Like, for some reason people think he's boring, but he's not. And here he does it again at the very end when he refuses to take medicine.
Yeah.
Before he wants to feel all the feelings of love, you know, as it, even though it hurts so bad. And that's such a wonderful, way to think about love and that those kind of things. And oh, Kim, a wonderful pick.
And Jim, I think this episode, Harry himself is a sneaky but good character as well.
Yeah, he's a sneaky good character.
And by the way, I think it's number three in Trek ranks, but Timeless is a Harry Kim episode.
Yes!
It's the best episode in Voyager. It's a Harry Kim episode. So there's a lot of value in Harry Kim. Now listen, I will say that there are times when I think maybe Garrett Wong's acting and performance isn't the strongest, maybe when compared to some other characters, but in this episode, home run, every scene, he just nails it. Those scenes with Janeway and Kate Mulgrew are impressive. So, yeah, this one is sneaky good for me. Sneaky great, because that's my number one.
Sneaky great.
All right, let's do some secondary systems picks. Jen, what just missed your list?
Okay. Well, the funny thing for me is that, and I saw on your list too, Voyager came up often.
Yeah,
in these lists.
We will relay those numbers shortly.
Yeah, okay.
But,
so let's start. So mine are Voyager mostly. So Tsunkatse is sneaky good.
Oh, it's sneaky good.
Because it should cynically be, you know, it's just a marketing gimmick,
right?
Promo for WWF SmackDown. And it's, you know, with stunt casting and everything, but it's sneaky good. You know, I think part of it, The Rock is only in it for a little bit. He drops some bows and does a people's eyebrow and then he's out of there. And then it becomes a character study on Seven, and you have Jeffrey Combs and you have J.G. Hertzler.
Yeah.
Like, what's not to like about that episode? So that one kind of sneaks up on you. I also have Course Oblivion.
Oh yes.
Who knew?
Oh, yeah.
Who knew we needed a sequel to the Random Demon episode? Yeah, who knew? But I did, and it's gripping and tragic and beautiful and a wonderful episode.
Oh,
and then I have two more. I have 30 Days.
Oh yeah.
Just because personally, I've never connected with Paris as a character. I don't want to say anything bad about him. I'm sure he's somebody's favorite character, but I just never connected with him personally. So it's like, oh, here's a Paris episode. Oh, Paris did something dumb, and now he's in the brig, of course, you know. but he really grows as a character in that episode and starts to believe in something very timely, you know, climate change.
I love it.
He becomes climate change becomes important to him here, and you know, and then of course he takes it too far and becomes an eco-terrorist because he likes to take things too far. But I that really changed the way I looked at the character of Paris. And that one snuck up on me too.
I love those picks. All Voyager. Yeah.
Yeah, all Voyager.
And Voyager did lead the way in our picks, which
that's so funny.
All right, Ron, any you want to rattle off?
Yeah, I had three, and they're all, you know, bottom at Trek Ranks. the original series, The Way to Eden. I thought that episode, again, just a feel-good episode. It's fun to watch.
That was on my Grew to Love episodes. I have grown to love that episode. And I've actually moved it up a little bit in Trek Ranks.
Yep, it's Deep Space Nine, Move Along Home.
Yes.
Not the best episode, but again, just fun to watch. I mean, yep. I'm a big fan of early Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And then the last one I had is absolute dead bottom on Trek Ranks for Deep Space Nine, Profit and Lace, being a Ferengi episode. You know, I rewatched, I almost put that in my top five, but upon watching it, there are some scenes in there that are just offensive today, but it's still a fun episode.
It's so interesting you say that, because I watched that again recently, thinking like, oh no, why am I watching this? You know, thinking, but it didn't age as badly as I thought it would, and it could have been a good episode. There were the bones there for it to be a good episode. So it's,
well, if you're scoring at home, this is the episode where Ron chose The Final Frontier, Star Trek V, and Profit and Lace. He did not hit the trifecta with And the Children Shall Eat. So all right, I'm gonna rattle off a couple. My toughest cuts were Spectre of the Gun from TOS. Oh. That is a sneaky good episode. And from Deep Space Nine, I love A Simple Investigation.
Yes.
I just think that's just a sweet episode with Odo, and it's got that little bit of the detective noir feeling. And my elsewhere on my secondary systems, I had Where Silence Has Lease from TNG, Unexpected from Enterprise, which is unexpected that it's on my list, and Dramatis Personae from Deep Space Nine, another season one Deep Space Nine episode. Something about that one. Thanks, Book. He loves it. Something about that one that I do love. So, and then I had one on my too good to include list, and it's Night from Voyager. I do think it gets the respect that it deserves, and I think people know that it's a really good episode, but it's still never kind of referenced as like a top tenner, but it is an amazing episode. Okay. Awesome job, you guys. I knew this was going to be a super interesting and fun topic with some deep cut picks, but let's jump into our regeneration cycle and go through some quick stats to wrap it up.
Computer, activate regeneration cycle. Alcoves beta and gamma.
Okay, let's recap our picks. Jen, run down your five sneaky good episodes.
Okay, number five was Short Treks Season 1, Episode 2, Calypso. Number four was Voyager Season 3, Episode 17, Unity. Number three, Next Generation Season 5, Episode 21, The Perfect Mate. Number two, Deep Space Nine Season 5, Episode 12, The Begotten. And number one, Voyager, Season 5, Episode 22, 1159.
Fantastic. So you had two from Voyager and one each from TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Discovery. So you spread it around pretty good. Ron, how about you? Break down your top five.
So at number five, I had Voyager, Season 2, Episode 15, Threshold. Number four, Next Generation, Season 7, Episode 14, Sub Rosa. Number three, Enterprise, Season 4, Episode 22, These Are the Voyages. Number two was Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And number one was Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 16, Bar Association.
Brilliant. You spread it around. You did the I don't know, we need a name for this. When someone does five different incarnations of Trek in their picks, maybe we'll call it the Warble moving forward.
Love it.
So you had one from TOS, one from TNG, one from Deep Space Nine, one from Voyager, and one from Enterprise. Pretty amazing. My five picks were number five, The Haunting of Deck 12 from Voyager. Number four, We'll Always Have Paris from TNG. Number three was Repentance from Voyager. Number two, Transfigurations from TNG. And number one, The Disease from Voyager. So I was just Voyager and TNG. I had three Voyager episodes and two from TNG. Not planned, but that's how it ended up. And our breakdown, we had no duplicates, but we had a pretty good spread here for all the different Trek incarnations. No Kelvin timeline picks, but one each from TOS, Enterprise, and Discovery. 2 from Deep Space Nine, 4 from TNG, and Voyager led the way with 6 overall picks. Fantastic breakdown. But as we do every week, we've once again entered a temporal causality loop. So before we can depart, it's time to hear from you.
Enterprise has been caught up in a temporal causality loop, and I suspect that something similar may have happened to you.
For this week's temporal causality loop, we are going all the way back to episode 62 and our top 5 Trek pets. One of my favorite topics. I love it. First up, well, let's get it out of the way. It's from Jen Tift at Edith Quarks, and I loved your 5 words and a hashtag on this pick. Love me, love my Targ, hashtag the heart of a warrior. That's fantastic, picking the Targ.
Martok loved that Targ.
I know.
Left the door open.
So that hurts so bad. That's worthy of a breakup.
Oh, man.
From Adam Huno, at Adam Huno, who's been on many episodes of Trek Ranks. He had 2 great picks. One that I forgot. It's the first time I had a pick I was actually going to include in my picks, and I completely forgot to reference it. It was the Reel from Star Trek Insurrection, the little palm pet that was Artem's pet. I love that little cute thing. And then he had a great pick at his number 1. It was Jean-Luc Picard from All Good Things. When Data references Hugh's interest in you has always been similar to that of a master and his beloved pet. That was only an analogy, Captain. I love that pick. Fantastic. We had a great 5 words and hashtag from John Fuchsius at John Fuchsius Online. He had Irish setter for Irish badass. Hashtag she's a good dog, Brunt. It's Molly from Voyager's caretaker. Great pick. And then we're going to rattle off the list here from Ben Nicholson at Ben Kernow. A great list that he sent in. Number 5, should she be called Mr. T? Hashtag mutant pets mutated spot. It's mutated spot from Genesis. He had Odo's Tribble from Trials and Tribulation. Hashtag mortal enemy of the Empire, which I love. You're never late for dinner. Hashtag you have Porthos. It's T'Pol's Saylot. That's another great pick. Number 2, he is watching his weight. Hashtag jerk. It's Leonard the Iguana from Lifeline. And his number 1 pick was trying to be of service. Hashtag walkies. It's Mirror Garrick, who was on a leash in Shattered Mirror from Worf. So that was a great, great list as well. All right. Once again, those picks more than enough to get us clear of this week's temporal causality loop. So as always, I want to thank everyone for all your great responses to the Trek Ranks podcast. So please keep your list coming to me at Trek Ranks on Twitter here so we can retweet them. But we also want to hear from you. So put together your own list of top 5 sneaky good episodes or any list from any of our past shows and give us a call at the Tricorder Transmissions at 609-512-5527 at 609-512-LLAP. So hopefully we'll hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And on the next episode of Trek Ranks, we're going to do one of those weird kind of out there topics that we love to do from time to time here on Trek Ranks. And I'm just going to, all I'm going to say, this topic, here's the title, Abstract Threes. That's it. Abstract Threes. So what do you think of in terms of Star Trek when you hear Abstract Three? Jen, Ron, anything jumping into your head that you would think of when you hear Abstract Three?
All I can think is cause and effect. Three.
There you go.
Pips for Commander Riker.
I think that's a popular one. Riker's 3 pips and Data dropping threes all over the ship. That's one for sure that I think will get consideration. And that's what we're looking for. Just any Abstract Three you can think of. How about you, Jen?
I got nothing.
You got nothing. That one.
That's a great topic. Because it could be so broad. It could be Kirk, Spock, McCoy, you know.
There you go. The trifecta is a 3. I was thinking you could do something like, and I'm not going to use any of these, but the three actresses that played Zial.
Oh, I like that. That's
or
a great
the
pick.
the first three parter in Star Trek.
Ooh.
Homecoming, the Circle, and the Siege. Any abstract three you want to pick, that's what we're going to do. So we're not going to rank them. We're just going to.
Vulcan Trilogy.
It's just going to be, yeah, there you go. Vulcan Trilogy. That's a good one. We're going to come up with abstract three. It's going to be a little bit out there, but I'm confident it's going to be an awesome conversation about Star Trek.
Oh, it's going to be great.
All right. So before we wrap it up here, a huge thanks to Jen Tift and Ron Warble. It was great to have you guys on the show. I love this topic and I love the conversation. Any final subspace communications you guys want to relay before we sign off? Jen?
No, just thanks for having me. This was a really fun topic. Yeah, I'm still interested that Voyager had so many picks. I don't know what that says.
I know. I think means that Voyager is sneaky good.
As a series, Voyager is sneaky good. That's my final thought.
I love it. All right, Ron, it was great to have you on, man.
No, thank you for having me. Any chance to talk Trek, I'll take it. This is fun.
I love it. Being the first of many, we hope. All right. So just want to thank everyone again for engaging with us here on episode 67 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, I want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
Maybe he was afraid.
Of what? Of me?
Oh, of being connected, rooted. Perhaps if he's as young as you are, he doesn't know yet exactly what it is he wants to do. Maybe... Enough of this self-indulgence.
Exit!
Just want to remind everyone again that the entire Trek Ranks catalog is available for you to download and listen to at TrekRanks.com and on your podcast player of choice. Our episodes never get carbon dated, so check out the topics you've missed and maybe just want to listen to again over at TrekRanks.com. And a reminder to check out our friends 5-Year Mission at 5YearMission.net. They're writing a song for every episode of Star Trek, and you won't believe how great their music is. They also have a podcast at the Trek Geeks Network, so seek them out. You won't regret it.
Captain.
Stowart, Ensign. Right now, the only thing standing between you and the brig is this report. The doctor's bioscans confirm that you and Tal have developed some sort of biochemical bond. Clearly, it's affected your behavior, so I have to assume that's why you disobeyed my orders. Report to sick bay. You'll be confined there until this is over.
Captain!
I told you to report for treatment.
I don't want treatment!
In my ready room. You've got 30 seconds before I have Tuvok drag you to sick bay.
Captain, I am not sick. I didn't disobey your orders because I'm under some alien influence. I disobeyed your orders because Tal and I are in love, and it's not right for you to keep us apart.
You listen to yourself. You don't sound anything like the Harry Kim I know.
Good. I have served on this ship for 5 years and said yes, ma'am, to every one of your orders, but not this time.
You're willing to risk your rank, your career over this?
Have you ever been in love, Captain?
Your point?
Did your skin ever flush when you were near another person? Did your stomach ever feel like someone hollowed it out with a knife when you were apart? Did your throat ever swell when you realized it was over? Seven of nine told me love's like a disease. Well, maybe it is. Pheromones, endorphins, chemicals in our blood, changing our responses, physical discomfort. But any way you look at it, it's still love.
For the sake of argument, let's say you're right. Your feelings for Tal are no different than mine for, what, the man I was engaged to marry? Well, I lost him. And you're going to lose Tal, you know that. What the doctor is offering you is a way to ease the pain.
That man you were going to marry. If you could have just taken a hypospray to make yourself stop loving him, so that it didn't hurt so much when you were away from him. Would you have done that?
Captain, to the bridge.